You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, gold today, in case you're interested, it's April 18th, hit 2000 yet again. And well, what does that mean for the future? The stocks are still lagging. The junior miners are lagging. Seen a little bit of activity a bit in the majors and some of the mid-tiers, but the big money has not yet been made in the sector. And Brian Lenny is with me, publisher of JuniorStockReview.com, also a bit of an expert in the sector. He's an engineer by trade, so that gives him a big advantage over you and I in many ways, especially being able to review technical reports and such. Brian, it's great to have you back on. So commodity super cycle is upon us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carrie. Yeah, it certainly is. But as you allude to, if you're a gold investor, you really haven't seen that pop yet. But I think I view it anyways as opportunity. You know, I look for value in the market. And to me, the gold thesis has never been stronger than it is today. And therefore, if the juniors haven't kept up to the valuation of gold, to me, that spells opportunity. And I'm willing to wait until it turns.
All right. Hey, so patience is a virtue. But I think, in my opinion, why the sector has lost so much of its luster, if you will, up until now, and periodically we see bursts of enthusiasm, you know, 2016, 2020, we see it. But the process of a junior making a discovery and going through all the legal hoops and hurdles that Canadian law requires, and let's face it, most of these are Canadian companies, it's kind of a buzzkill, and it really drains enthusiasm from the sector.
Oh, yes, certainly. You know, discovery is something that can drive markets. And I've seen it happen before, especially in certain areas that kind of, you know, catch fire. If you look back, basically 2020 is when it really spurred was, you know, discovery in Newfoundland. And I'm talking about Newfound Gold. They come out, make this discovery in the Keats Zone and very splashy, high grade material. And not only that, but the company did a fantastic job actually marketing it and getting it out to people. The big issue that I saw is, you know, we've talked about it before, you know, it is cyclical. And we had this boom period in 2020 where we had 5 months of some pretty good action. And then things sort of fizzled out in some ways, depending on what segment of the market you're in. But not only that, we saw other markets emerge. You know, Bitcoin and crypto were probably the biggest story of 2021. And again, something that was amazingly marketed to people. And, you know, still today, you know, when I'm watching TV, you see crypto commercials, you see, you know, celebrities talking about crypto. And I think, you know, I think that day is coming again for the commodities market. I think, you know, what we're seeing with the inflation, I think metal prices are inevitably going to go up and the cost of living is going to go up and people are going to be paying more attention to prices and, you know, maybe asking more questions about why things are going up. And invariably, people will start to make money. And I think you're going to see those same kind of commercials and attention drawn back to the commodities market because, you know, nothing drives greed like envy. And I think that's kind of what we saw with crypto. And I think we will see it again with commodities.
And FOMO, of course, fear of missing out. That's perhaps one of the biggest drivers. You know, they always say in Wall Street, there's only two emotions, fear and greed. When they combine, it's very powerful and markets can be moved dramatically in very short periods of time. But again, you know, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And the one thing I've seen with gold and mining stocks is, as well as the market in general, is that they always act to frustrate the majority of investors.
Yeah, for sure. You know, in my experience anyways, out of the, I don't know, decade or so that I've been doing this, there's been more frustrating years than what I would call like good or happy years. The thing is though, you know, once you've done this long enough, you know that when you get those good years, you savor it and you make sure that you take some profit. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make, and they probably made this last cycle, is they put a bunch of money in, they started making money as the market rose, and they decided to ride it. You know, I'm going to ride this thing to the moon. And instead what happened is we saw things, and I'm talking mainly with gold, things started to kind of fizzle out, attention dropped, and you know, the market basically dropped by 50%. And in essence, you become a bag holder in that scheme of things. So you didn't take full advantage of that boom market. And, you know, that's one of those lessons I think you unfortunately have to learn. I was there, you know, at the beginning of my investing career. I held the bag on numerous things up and down. And unfortunately, the other tendency is that people get impatient on the downside. And so they ride it up and then they come to the trough and they say, you know what, I'm out. And they miss that next boom, and or they potentially don't learn from it. So, you know, that's part of being an investor in the junior resource sector. And if you can keep on moving your money and taking those profits, I think it makes a big difference both mentally and of course, in your bottom line wealth.
Absolutely. And my philosophy of investing has changed much over the years, which has made me more successful in recent years than past. And that is always take money off the table. When you have a profit, don't go plowing it all back. You know, save some, keep your powder dry. So preparation, effectively what you're saying, and I think you view it from an engineering perspective, is that you need to prepare and you need to have a strategy. What's your strategy for identifying those leaders or the future leaders so that you can be there at the right time in the right place, Brian?
For me, you know, there's definitely a quantitative and qualitative point of view, but I always start with the quantitative. So whenever I'm looking at companies, I'm looking at the value or establishing a value for that company and comparing it to what how the market's valuing it. That's where everything starts. If I see a difference in value that fits my viewpoint and risk profile, then that's where I start first. And then from there, I'm looking at the people and all those, you know, standard things, the jurisdiction, the metal, and how they can make that project better and possibly gain market recognition for this stuff that they're doing, which is a big deal. Like, you can have companies that are selling for less than they're worth. Sometimes it's for good reason. Sometimes you have companies that have 3 million ounces of gold, but those 3 million ounces are refractory and it requires, you know, $2,500 gold just to make this thing profitable. To me right now, that's probably not the type of gold store you want to be in. So that would be one factor. The other side is, you know, maybe they need some results to make this deposit bigger. Maybe it's a 1 million ounce deposit and it's probably going to take, let's say, 1.5 million ounces to really make the economics pop and really capture market attention. So you want to look at how that company is going to build that extra, you know, half a million ounces, where it's going to come from, what timeline it's going to take, and then if the people that are running the company are actually capable of it. And if those things align, I would say that you're probably going to get market recognition from it. But the other thing that I've definitely learned over time is timelines don't always work. And if you were an investor in 2020 and you were very bullish and you said, you know, this is going to take 6 months for the market to recognize this value, and then you waited 1.5 years and you're sitting here today and you're saying, I wonder if they're going to be recognized for their value. And to me, you know, 1.5 years, it seems like a long time. And especially with the perspective of how people are making money, like we talked about in those other markets. But really 1.5 years really isn't that long a time. And I think the way that things are kind of aligning now, when that value does get recognized, especially if you stuck to the best of the best gold companies, I think you're going to see 2 and 3 and 4 times your money made from these investments. And being patient and picking right is going to pay off big time. And in the end, you know, 1.5 years, 2 years is going to seem, you know, very short after you're successful.
Yeah. Well, everything looks, everything looks good in the rearview mirror. Hey, so when you're looking at a company, do you look for a minimum reserve or potential size of the mine? Is it 1 million ounces, 2 million, 500,000? What do you look for?
Don't just survive, thrive.
The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
You know, I have to say it depends. And why I say it depends is because there's more to it. So you want to, I think first and foremost, the thing that needs to work is the economics, whether it's big or small. They need to have robust economics, meaning they have an internal rate of return above 20% after tax. And the NPV in comparison to their market cap, you know, there's a good arbitrage there in value. Because if there isn't, then you're taking on a lot of risk to get this thing into production and such. But, you know, smaller deposits can work. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have an oxide deposit in Nevada and it's located close to a mid-tier producer in Nevada. And they put together a nice 500,000 ounce deposit that's got a, you know, plus, let's say it's 1.5 grams per ton near surface with great economics. To me, I'd be very interested in a deposit like this. If it's located near a mid-tier producer, and especially if that grade of that deposit is higher than what they're producing at that mid-tier, I think there's a lot to say that this could be a potential M&A candidate because of proximity and, you know, grade. It just makes sense. On the other hand, in some of these more obscure places, a 500,000 ounce deposit in James Bay is probably not going to work. You know, you're going to need some scale there to make sure the economics work. And so there, if it's James Bay or one of these harder places, I think you got to look at those multi-million ounce deposits, something that can stand alone and potentially, you know, again, so there's two different views. Somebody's going to either buy it and make a standalone mine, or the people that are running the company are going to develop that into a mine itself. That's very rare. There's not a lot of groups of people that can do that. The typical out for the investor is through M&A. And therefore, if that's the case, if 75% of the companies are going to get bought out, then you need to find reasons to think that this is going to be a standalone mine in these more remote places. So for me, it definitely depends. But economics is the first part. And then second is probably where it's located, you know, and who it's located near. And then third, you know, who are those people that are driving the project? Do they have connections in terms of M&A, or are these guys actual mine developers? And, you know, the answering the question of mine developers is actually quite easy because you definitely want to see someone who's done it before. So that'd be your kind of qualifying for that part of it.
Absolutely. And so you brought up M&A, and this is a sector that really exists for the purposes of M&A to be bought out eventually. And interestingly enough, you know, there's a handful of companies out there. There aren't tons of companies. You don't have the potential of hundreds of potential suitors or even dozens. You might have four or five. A lot of it depends on where geographically you are. In Canada, you might have more. In Africa, you might have less. In the U.S., you know, probably similar to Canada. But the M&A, we saw Great Bear, but not a lot of other big acquisitions have taken place.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's kind of indicative of where the market was and that slash, you know, how COVID has really changed the landscape of things. You know, even still in Canada, you know, we were talking off mic before we started the interview, you know, how there's still travel restrictions in Canada, you know, depending on who you are and what you've decided to do with your life, you're restricted in your travel. And, you know, that's the little Canada itself, but across the world, different corporations have instituted different travel restrictions. And I think that precipitated out into the mining sector. And I think that's why we haven't seen as much M&A as you would think we would at, you know, $1,900 or $2,000 gold, which, you know, makes a lot of these development projects very attractive. But I think, again, I think it's coming. The world is opening up. People are getting on planes and they're going places. And I think you're going to see you know, definitely for what we're seeing in the world right now, I think you're going to see higher gold prices. And I think at least in the gold market, this is going to precipitate more action. And like you said, there's going to be regions in the world where I think it's even more evident, like Africa being one of them. I think you're going to see a lot of action in Africa. It's kind of like that last frontier, and maybe one of the freer places to do it, because again, Canada and the States are very free in one respect, but it comes with more regulation, more red tape. And I think the process for finding or deciding on buying a company, I think takes a little bit longer. Whereas in Africa, I think it's a little more straightforward. So yeah, I think M&A is, I think the wave is coming, and I positioned the premium portfolio accordingly. And yeah, I think we're in for a pretty interesting second half of the year.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean when you say think people are back on the airplanes. I was traveling myself over the holiday weekend. Wasn't packed like prior COVID, but still there was a lot of people on the planes. Places were crowded. I know where I am in Florida, it kind of never stopped, but that's an anomalous case. And now we start seeing conferences coming up that we'll be able to attend. And, you know, there's always two parts of a conference. There's the public face where you kind of mull around, talk to CEOs, and then it's behind the scenes where the deals are actually getting made. I know of a couple of transactions coming up shortly that probably will have substantial impact on certain companies, rumored transactions. And all of that bodes well. And the problem is that if you're not really set up to do this, then you're going to miss out, FOMO. And that's where, I guess, junior stock review comes in.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've got the portfolio designed to be in the best companies in what I think in the sector, the ones that have the most value, most upside potential, and they accordingly have the best risk profile, so the best risk to reward. I've got, right now, I carry about 17 companies in the premium portfolio, and about 50% of my money is concentrated in that top maybe seven companies. And I think that those top seven companies are ripe for M&A. And there's a couple of them that I think that are going to go this summer in particular. And, you know, when June rolls around, you know, one of the companies that's a second ranked number two in the premium portfolio, I think that one goes in June or July of this year. And I think that's going to be a big win for Junior Stock Group premium subscribers. So yeah, that's how I position my money, and great risk to reward. And right now I'm averaging about 125% per pick, and it's a really good place to be.
All right. And it's important to realize that, of course, this is your livelihood. I mean, you sell a newsletter, but you're making your livelihood investing in these companies, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's all my money, and about 90% of the money I make in a yearly basis comes from my investing. And that's my primary focus. Really what the newsletter is that it keeps me anchored to staying to my process. When I'm anchored to, you know, my subscribers, and, you know, always bringing a weekly comment and, you know, covering companies, it doesn't let me get lazy. And so I really enjoy that part of it. But yeah, it's all my money invested in there. And that's what I primarily live on.
All right. And contrary to popular belief, most newsletters are kind of like, you know, added income, side hustle, whatever. People aren't getting wealthy off of them. That's what I mean to tell you. Some people are, but for the most part, those are larger entities with huge marketing budgets. What made you decide to publish a newsletter? I mean, I know it's easy entry. You do a website, it's simple, but it requires sustained effort, continual effort. You got to always be creating new material for you subscribers out there. Yeah. You know, it's a real commitment.
You know, honestly, Carrie, how it basically worked for me is one of the big things that I would tell any new investor or investor now is they need to be self-aware. And self-aware is very broad. It has to do with risk. It has to do with how you analyze companies. For me, one of the big components is how I learn. And how I learn or put together a thesis is through writing. My process of putting together an article to say why I want to invest in a company is integral for my success. And I can tell you the times that I haven't put together an article to say why I want to invest, and these are the points, and this is how I think it's going to work. When I haven't done that, those have been the ones I've made my biggest mistakes. When I do make a clear process, especially if I want to try to explain my position to somebody else, a reader, is when I've done the best and consistently done the best. And the other side to it is, like I said previously, having that responsibility for not only myself, but for somebody else is something that I take really seriously. And again, it keeps me from being lazy, which I might do if it was just me. So for me, it's twofold. It's how I learned and how to put ideas together. And secondly, it keeps me honest to myself and to my readers and, you know, picking the best companies that I can and keeping track of them.
Yeah, it keeps you focused, keeps you fresh. You have to keep coming up with new ideas. And that's a great thing. So you should go over to juniorstockreview.com, take a look at it and see if it's for you. And there's a link in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you sign up for your free newsletter. Brian, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.